The purpose of Wealth Talk is to educate, inform, and hopefully entertain you on the subject of building your wealth. Wealth Builders recommends you should always take independent financial, tax, or legal advice before making any decisions around your finances.
Oh, welcome to episode 38 of Wealth Talk. My name is Christian Rodwell, the membership director for Wealth Builders, and I'm joined by the founder, Mr. Kevin Whelan. Hi, Kevin.
Hello, Chris. Good evening to you. I think we've got a shout out this evening, haven't we?
Yes. We had a wonderful message through the Wealth Builders website this week from Rob Riles. So thank you so much, Rob. We really appreciate you listening all the way over in Bangladesh. It's great to hear that the message is spreading across the world, Kevin.
Well, he's a football coach, isn't he? So I think he's British through and through. But good to know, though, that more and more people are reaching out. And in fact, Southeast Asia, somebody very famous in Southeast Asia reached out this week, didn't they? And want to be featured on our podcast. So more of that one in due course.
Yeah, it's really wonderful. So we appreciate all of the reviews, the time that you are taking to let us know that you're enjoying listening to Wealth Talk. We really, really do appreciate it. And if you haven't yet left a review and you'd like to do so, then please feel free to head on over to wealthbuilders.co.uk/Wealth Talk or pop a quick message and say hello in iTunes. Okay, so Kevin, we are continuing the theme of business this week, and we, of course, spoke to John Warrilow last week. That was very enjoyable indeed.
John is just a great guy, as I mentioned to you. And the thing to mention about John is, even though you can tell by the accent that he's Canadian, which is different to an American accent for those who can pick it up, but the ideas and everything he explores in his books on the subject of business are universal principles. And that's what we want to make sure, that nobody thinks it's not applicable to the UK. It's absolutely applicable to the UK.
It is. Now, John sold one of his businesses, and off the back of that, he wrote the book Built to Sell. That was around 2012. And that then led to the creation of the Value Builder System, which John briefly touched on in last week's interview. But what is the Value Builder System exactly, Kevin?
Well, you know, John has a view that most businesses, especially coming from the fact that when he was thinking about selling his, stems from the fact that, you know, most people sell one business in a lifetime, but those who are acquiring those businesses are very, very seasoned in that acquisition. And consequently, he feels, and I think he's true, that the odds, for the most part, are stacked up against those who want to sell their business. So John wanted to level the playing field a little and say, well, look, instead of just kind of turning up and saying, I want to sell my business, here's a set of metrics, here's a foundational set of principles that you could use to help increase the value of your business and understand then what's in the mind of the acquirer or potential acquirer. Now, that turns the tables a bit, doesn't it? Because it allows you to think, well, who is likely to be interested in buying my business? Now, it doesn't mean you need to sell a business, because he makes the point that every good business must be capable of being sold. So whether you pass it on to your kids, whether you pass it on to your employees, you still need good principles in place for a good business to be there. The thing I would say, though, is only selling a business gets you a premium price, because an acquirer, if you understand exactly how to position the sale of your business, will pay the premium, whereas your family and your employees simply never will. So just an interesting point. So he comes from a viewpoint, and he created eight value builder drivers, which if you isolate them all, I'm not going to go into all of them. I think we've got Richard, who's going to talk a little bit more about that in a few minutes, right?
Yes, that's right.
So Richard Perry is an action coach in the UK, and Action Coach in the UK are probably the largest supplier of coaching expertise to businesses, and they often will use the Value Builder metrics, and many of them are trained in the metrics. Essentially, they say a number of things. You know, there are eight of them, and rather than go into eight, there's a couple which really focus on finance, as you'd expect, because we know all businesses need to be valued at least some point in terms of, you know, what's the finances and are they stable and solid, and is the business actually growing? Those are kind of really quite important things, generally speaking. And you may recall that I mentioned that most businesses are valued, Chris, in a previous podcast on something called EBITDA, which is earnings before insurance, tax and amortization, basically profit. So you take your profit and most businesses will get a multiple of that profit, whether it's 2x profit, 5x profit and so on. Now, John's view is that those people who spend time working on all the metrics, not just the finance, but some of the others, which I'll touch on, have a strong chance of doubling the value of that multiple. Now, if you can double the value of anything and you have a successful business, and instead of selling it for $2 million, you sell it for $4 million, that's going to be life-changing numbers. And you don't have to do life-changing work. You just need to focus on some of those key things. Now, some of them would be the importance of having a business that works without the owner in the business. And that's really critical. And that comes across in a couple of the metrics. Another one is measuring that customer satisfaction. So not just accepting the referrals you get, but having something in your business that measures that. So it gives a score on that customer satisfaction and the likelihood then of people willing to repeat and refer. And that can hold instead, you know, a good valuation thought too. Another big one is what we call the monopoly effect, which is essentially not the board game, Chris, but I always ask a question of any business owner that I meet, and which is this: is the number one prevalent in your business? And they all look at me quizzically. So what do you mean, Kevin, the number one? Right, okay. Are you relying too much on one customer? Are you relying too much on one supplier? Is there one employee that's critical to the business that if that employee wasn't there, like you, would seriously affect the impact of the business? So you see what I mean by that monopoly issue. But the other big one, and it's the big one that I'll keep on going on about, Chris, is recurring income. Because the degree to which you can create recurring income in a business creates that double-edged sword that cuts both ways for you, positively on one side and positively on the other side, which is if you've got great recurring income, then the income will carry on without you. That's great for an acquirer, right? And the other thing is you've got predictability. You've got the income stream, which is coming in, and you can predict how you grow your business, how you staff your business, how you systemize the business, because you've got income coming in all the time, which means if you sell it, you've got more value. And if you keep it, you've got a systemized business so you can spend the time doing as much in the business as you wish. But if you don't want to be, you don't need to be, because it will automatically run without you. So I think it'd be great to hear what these metrics are. And those people who focus on them, even if it's a little bit every month, just like I suppose we say, never let a month go by without doing something to create your wealth. Well, you could do that in your business, couldn't you, really? You could say, never let a month go by without working on something that's improving one of the metrics. So I hope Richard will do a great job in explaining what those metrics are, and maybe it would be good to debrief that when he's done.
Let's do that. Okay, let's head on over to our guest, Richard Perry. Welcome to Wealth Talk, Richard. How are you today?
I'm fine, Christian. Thank you very much. Yeah.
Great to have you, Richard. And of course, following on from our conversation with John Warrilow last week, it felt right to explore Value Builder in more detail. So, Richard, what's your association with Value Builder, if you don't mind sharing?
Absolutely, no problem. So Value Builder is a way of looking at how to value a company, obviously. And obviously, as the name suggests, how to build it. And I'm a business coach, so I'm working a lot with business owners, and they're clearly looking at growing their profits. But also they're looking at, I'm getting them to think about their business as an asset. It's something that is obviously separate from them as a legal entity. But also, yeah, they may be thinking about selling it. So how do we create the value as well as the profit? And we're looking at the multiple. Obviously, people always talk about, you know, if you're going to sell the business, we look at the multiple of profit. So we've got a really smart tool here developed by John, which really tunes in on, you know, these factors that help people improve that value.
Okay, so Richard, you're going to take us through the 8 key value builder drivers now.
Sure. So first one we're going to look at is financial performance. And that's really looking at the history of producing revenue and profit. And also one of the other factors that's quite interesting is looking at the professionalism of your bookkeeping and your record keeping. So what is the system you have for tracking the numbers? And that's really looking at the obvious things around, you know, what was the growth of the business? What's the current revenue, profit, gross margin, net margins? But more importantly, what's it like to be in the next 12 months? So what do you think the revenue turnover profit's going to be based on your percentage growth? Did you make a loss? Did you make a profit? Those typical things you'd expect to look at in valuing a company. Second one is the growth potential. And obviously that's, as it says, it's the likelihood that you're going to grow your business in the future and also what rate of growth you're going to have there. You might want to dig a bit deeper into certain sectors or certain areas and segments. But again, just give you the overall picture of looking at your industry. Are you growing above the average? And where's the growth going to come from? Okay, so turning to the third one, which is the Switzerland structure. As the name suggests, this is about the dependency or independency. So how dependent is your business on any one of the following? That could be the employee, the customer, the supplier. And interestingly enough, also how dependent is that business on you? So are you the job owner or are you the business owner? And that's something we're looking at as obviously as a business coach with an action coach is saying, how do you make the business less dependent on you and also those other factors? Because any potential buyer will see those as a risk and therefore they'll downplay the value. So that's the Switzerland structure. Next one we're going to look at is what we call the valuation seesaw. To capture that one in the headline, that's really looking at the cash flow. So it's saying, is it the business generating cash? Is it sucking the cash out? Or what are the typical gross margins, net margins? How's the cash flow? So we're looking at the balance between, can you get the cash flow? Is it predictable? Is it certain? Is it recurring? So it's ties in with the recurring predictability of the revenue. If a business is generating a lot of cash, it's going to need to borrow less, and therefore the potential buyer is going to be looking at that cash generation and going to give it a much better valuation. So that's the seesaw. Now, fifth one is called what we call it the hierarchy of recurring revenue. And really that's the proportion and the quality of the automatic or the recurring revenue you collect each month. And that could be through, say, subscription models. Actually, John's got another book on the automatic customer, which goes through, I think, 9 different models. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that. So that's worth a read. So again, we're looking at what percentage of your sales and revenue is recurring. And that could be defined as subscriptions, maintenance contracts, sort of annuity streams. And really the way to look at that is the customer would need to opt out of spending the money. So you sign them up and really they need to make the effort to opt out. So it's not something you've got to chase. It's just really, it's going to come in regardless of pretty much how much you service them or what you actually do. You don't need to spend as much on marketing.
Yeah, I was actually just, Richard, I was listening to a different marketing podcast just last week and they were saying, not to get confused with a payment plan spread over 12 months. It is not the same. That is not recurring revenue. It's just delayed payment. So as you rightly say, this is something that the customer needs to opt out of, something like a Netflix subscription or something along those lines.
Yeah, exactly. I think once you get the definition of these words right, but it does make sense. It's like how much money you're getting, how often, how protected is it? And that leads us on to the sixth drive, which is it's monopoly control. So really, when we think of monopoly, we tend to think of monopoly investigations as something perhaps negative. But really, in this context, in Value Builder, we're talking about how differentiated your business is from the competitors in your industry. And obviously, differentiation is the key element of marketing. And our friend Warren Buffett will talk about building businesses with a moat around them to protect that. So once you've got into that business, you've got the revenue, how can you protect yourself? What are the barriers to entry? How do you get some sort of monopoly control? But obviously, this is talking about it in a good competitive marketing sense of the word. And again, there's things you can do to improve that. How exclusive is your product to the market? How do you differentiate? What's the niche? And again, I'd call that the marketing driver. The seventh driver is a customer score. And really, that's the likelihood that your customer is going to repurchase or refer you. So this brings us into something called NPS, which is the Net Promoter Score. And you'll see this was invented by the guys at Bain & Co., the consultancy company. Basically, clients are more likely to buy from you and they're more likely to refer you. Again, that's multiplying up the revenue, that's multiplying up the predictability, and it's multiplying the whole recurring revenue. And you'll find that companies with a high net promoter score, normally it's between minus 100 and 100. Anything above 50 is seen as world class. And I have to put a plug in for Action Coach because we've got a score of 77. So what that means is people like what we do, they like to reuse us continuously, and they like to refer others. And that can apply to any business at all. Yeah. So anybody who wants to really look at the value, go and look up how to work out your net promoter score. You need to get it done independently, but it's a really key one. And then the other factor, number 8, call it the hub and spoke. So it's really saying, look, how would your business perform if you were unexpectedly unable to work for, let's say, a period of 3 months. So if I said to you, Christian, right, I'm taking you out of the business, give me a phone, we're closing it down, I'm sending you off for a month, 2 months, 3 months, what would you come back to? So again, how dependent is the business on you? Okay. So we look at how much of that business is personally done by you, how often the customers ask for you by name and say, I want to speak to the boss. Because we might like to think, maybe our ego suggests that's a good thing, but really what it's signaling is that you've got the job, people want you, and really what you've got to do is build the system and the team that can function without you. So that covers the eight factors. I've got a couple of little case studies, really, of companies which, if I gave you the numbers, you'd be surprised at what they actually sold for.
Yeah, let's go through those quickly.
So what we've got here is, let's start with the first one. So a lady called Jill Nelson over in the States, and she had a company which was called Ruby Receptionist, and basically an answering service, and that was doing a turnover of about $11 million with a profit of around just over $1 million. And you'd think, well, in that industry, it comes under the category of admin and wastage for some reason, but typically the multiples are going to be, you know, just under two. So with a profit of one, you'd be expecting the value of that sale to be around $2 million. So again, $2 million, $11 million turnover, $1 million profit. She sold that business for $38 million.
Wow.
So, you know, it wasn't just the history, it wasn't just the current situation, there's something about the future of that business, it's something about how that business fitted in with the buyer that made it much more valuable. And again, by using the Value Builder score as a sort of benchmark, as a scorecard, that was then enabling her to say, well, I know why my business is valuable.
So if I may just jump in there and ask, if a client comes to you and takes the Value Builder assessment here, and obviously you analyze the report together, you know, how would you approach making progress, you know, as quickly as possible? Do you look at the lowest scoring areas, or do you just have a holistic approach, you know, overall look at the business and just see where it makes sense to focus on first?
I think with any sort of reviews or coaching or consultancy, I think, yeah, if there's some quick fixes that need to be done, I would look at those. But I think the most important thing is it's about the mindset of the owner. Firstly, to say, well, how can I build this business so that it's not dependent on me? How can I build the revenue? How can I get the niche and differentiation that I can create predictability? So, yeah, we do want them to have a long-term approach, but we still want them to obviously improve their profit. And interestingly enough, let's say we increase the profit by 10,000 on a multiple of three, and obviously that's going to be worth 30,000 if you were selling. But if you can increase the profit by 10,000, but also increase the multiple to seven, that 10,000 then becomes worth 70,000. Not 30,000. So that's the power of it, really. So I think you've got to get the balance. But I would say, yeah, we need to look at all eight of them. If there's any quick fixes, obviously we've got to get in there. That could be price rises or cost reductions and all the typical things you'd imagine from coaching. But it's just a good framework, really.
And you had another case study as well, Richard.
Yeah. So it's a great little company again in the States here. Effectively a payroll company. It's a lady who was looking for company that could help her set up the payroll for her nanny in America, and she really couldn't get much interest from these large companies. So she decided, her and her husband decided to set it up themselves. So they built up the revenue to $9 million turnover. And again, this is just setting up the payroll for their nanny. And they sold that business to care.com. So they had a $9 million business, 10,000 customers, and along comes care.com with its 7 million subscribers and says, hang on a minute, we need a payroll company. If we could just sell that to 1% of our customers, that's 70,000. Yeah, that's going to be worth us having. So again, the business that was 9 million turnover, that was sold to care.com for $54 million.
And that was as a result of using the Value Builder system?
They'd gone through the Value Builder system, yes. Yeah, so they'd obviously got their average score and they'd worked through the whole thing using the eight factors. And really, again, that's a good example of them selling. You know, how does that business fit into a potential acquirer? And what is it they really value? It wasn't just the turnover. It was, what can that do for them in the future? It just solved the problem for them pretty much straight away with 7 million subscribers.
So, Richard, if someone would like to take the Value Builder assessment here, what's the best way of them going about that?
It takes about 15 minutes. You simply answer the questions based on all the things we've covered earlier. Plug in the numbers, and what it'll do is it will just give you the score for each of the eight factors. If you want, it'll give you a valuation based on your industry, and then it will tell you a few things about what you can do to make it more valuable. So I'm happy to share my link with you.
We'll certainly put that in the show notes. So Richard, thanks so much for sharing the 8 key value builder drivers there. That was fascinating. And speak again soon.
Thanks, Christian. Take care.
Hey, Kevin. So Richard talked us through the 8 drivers there and showing not just how to increase the value, but the profitability and the predictability of your business.
Yeah, I mean, you could see that if you could work on any of those, you're going to do something better for your business. And why wouldn't anybody really do that? It's just putting it in your field of vision so that you can work on those, as opposed to just doing what most people do in jobs and in business. They just turn the wheel, you know, but not the wheel as in focus on wheels as we know in wealth building, but just the hamster wheel. You know, they chase the profit, they chase the job, they chase the income. So having something to work on in addition to the traditional just, you know, make sales and generate profit is a really good thing to dive deeper into if you can. So, you know, take the Value Builder score. If you've got a business, go online. I think you can put a link to that in the show notes. And it's really important. You can get that score. You know, I did my score. I'm not going to tell you what it was, but it was reasonably high because of the recurring income. But, you know, that's a really important thing. And it was very helpful for me to do that. One of the things that I'm not sure he dived too much into, Chris, which is, you know, the process of how to sell, you know, and also why to sell. Beginning with the end in mind always comes to mind when thinking about business owners.
It is indeed. You know, we're often sharing with our foundation members that you always start with the end in mind, you know, defining what is that monthly target that you want in terms of asset income, and then working back from there, understanding which pillar, which strategy, and then the turning of the wheel process, which is the only way really to generate that recurring income.
Yeah, and you know, you could apply the same principle inside a business. You're just turning the value builder wheels inside your own business. And I think one of the points that I know from speaking with John that he does cover in other talks is, you know, how ready are business owners for sale? Because, you know, there's a big point, isn't there? That if you get to the point, and I've met many business owners, Chris, who get to the point when they are literally hanging on and their health is gone, you know, other things in their life are stressed and struggling, and they need to sell the business because unless they get something or some stress relieved from having to do all of this work, it's just really important to begin with that end in mind and almost work out, what does the business need to be worth in order for me to sell it, that when I take the capital sum from the sale, it would give me the income that I want to live financially free forever. Because I think what happens in business, not like property, I suppose, because there's lots of comparables in property. You know, people get a bit caught up, don't they, in their home. I'm not selling my home for anything less than whatever it is. And I think people get even more entrenched when it comes to their business. You know, they think that their business is worth so much more because they put more money into it and more time into it and more of their whole life into it. But that's not what values a business. What values a business, what's it worth to the acquirer? And the acquirer wants different things. They don't value what you've done. They value where it's going. So you have to think about where you're going. And then if you need the business to sell for 5 million, because you know that if you then invest that 5 million, you can get, you know, even if it's simple stock market stuff at 4%, you know, £200,000 worth of net income after you paid your tax gives you the income you want, then you don't need to sell your business for 6 million, you know, or take any number and multiply it in any which way you like. So there's always a reason to think about, are you ready as a person, as a business owner, to understand the psychology of selling the business and don't get caught up in trying to value things in a different way to an acquirer. So I think that's a really good thing. And there's many, many people I know, Chris, who are experts in the field of the process of selling a business, how to bring competitive bids, if you like. So you don't get to a situation where you meet one person and you sell to one person and you could, you know, well, not have a sense of the comparables. And the more you put in competition, the more you drive the potential for a higher increase because, you know, somebody's bidding with somebody else. So there are brokers and specialists who do this, the same as there are in any aspect of business life. And what I'm thinking about, Chris, is having one of those people come on and do a podcast with us and tell us a little bit more about the business selling process. How about that?
That'd be interesting. That really would. And one thing we haven't mentioned, really important word that's actually step four in the seven steps to wealth process that we're teaching is leverage. And there's just so much opportunity, isn't there, within every one of the pillars, but certainly in business, to really leverage what you already have and get much, much greater return.
I think there's no bigger return on your investment as an ROI with leverage than business, because it breaks all the molds. You know, you can impact so many people by systemizing a business with incredible value. And as a result of that, you can get multiples on your business in a way you can't get multiples on value of property or multiples on value of the stock market, because things are constrained by markets to a certain degree. Yes, you can add value in property, but you can add much more value in business, which is why, as I've said before, Chris, it's my very, very favorite wealth building pillar, and why I continue to be an owner of multiple businesses all focused on recurring income. And maybe at some point, Chris, it might be useful doing an interview with me.
Indeed. So I'm really enjoying the business pillar at the moment. And I think next week we can perhaps dive into some of the other metrics that we've not yet touched on.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I like the people at Action Coach. They've got a great set of values. And we've heard from Richard today, who's, you know, one of the coaches in there. And we've got a number who love the whole wealth building philosophy and the business building philosophy wrapped up. So I think next week, Chris, if we can, we'll interview another fellow and friendly coach, someone who's worked with wealth builders for a while and invested in being coached by myself to, you know, to help him grow his own wealth outside of his business. And that's an important thing as well. Definitely something to pick up on next time, Chris. So if you can create recurring income, multiple streams of recurring income, both inside and outside of your business, now that would make a world of difference to your wealth, wouldn't it?
Well, that sets up next week pretty nicely. I'm looking forward to that one, Kevin. Thank you for your time today. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And we'll see you next week.
Looking forward to it, Chris. See ya.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Don't forget that we are constantly updating our resources inside the Wealth Builders membership site to help you create, build, and protect your wealth. Head over to wealthbuilders.co.uk/membership right now for free access. That's wealthbuilders.co.uk/membership.